You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Alabama, now that we go, as we wrap up our annual Confederate History Month series this hour, we hope, ladies and gentlemen, that you've enjoyed this year's installment. And to wrap it up in a most light and lively way is our good dear friend Courtney from Alabama. You know, the last time we had Courtney on, it was Valentine's Day when we had the ladies' night. And I tell you, I know I said this just in the last hour this year. It's really flying by. We're already now beyond our March Around the World Confederate History Month series. May is coming up, the fifth month of the year already. We've got a lot of great things forthcoming for you, a lot of guests that we couldn't work in over the past couple of months because of the special series have been waiting, and they are waiting to be released, and we're going to have a very, very busy month of May. A magnificent May forthcoming, if you will. But now let's go to our final guest of Confederate History Month. How are you?
Hey, James. I'm very happy to be on. Thank you so much for having me back. This is my favorite topic. I did want to say real quickly, you mentioned the Valentine's Day show. I owe James an apology on air. I got a little frustrated on air over the Valentine's Day show, only because that was probably the only time I've ever done that. It was only because I didn't really practice ahead of time, and I had a lot of content, and I was so worried I wasn't going to get through all of it. So that's the only reason I, you know, sounded hesitant when, you know, James interjected at certain parts. But I normally don't do that, and, you know, that won't happen this time. And so anyways, I just wanted to explain why I did that. It was a
nobody would have remembered that, including myself. But you do have that steel trap memory. I actually listened back to that because you had brought it up before and still didn't even notice it. So anyway, misplaced worry indeed. Well, anyway, great to have you back tonight. And, you know, this we call it Confederate History Month. It certainly is that. But the series and the month, for that matter. But we're not necessarily talking about just guest after guest and hour after hour of dissecting the biographies of these great men, although that would certainly be time well spent, or the tactics of the different battles, although that would be time well spent. It's really more so than just Confederate History Month. It's really just a celebration of the South and Southern culture, but certainly highlighting and focusing on that four-year period. But that's what we're going to be doing tonight as well. So you've got some topics that are near to all of that. So let's start very quickly now, as we're already deep into this first segment, with what you have planned.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I wanted to go over a couple of topics that I think impact white Southerners today, and so I'm gonna get the serious negative stuff out of the way first, and then go to the lighthearted stuff at the end, how we want to end it. But the first topic, I don't want to rehash the entire McMichael and Roddy Bryan trial. I don't want to call it the Arbery trial because he wasn't defending himself. He was on the other side. Anyways, I think the death was tragic. But anyways, I'm not going to rehash the whole trial, but I do want to make a point about actual local Southerners in the South, actual real Southerners versus a lot of the problems that these liberal transplants from blue states are causing us. The McMichael trial would have had a very different trajectory if it was left in the hands of local Southerners in that area. I think there were two or three local district attorneys. There was a white female and then a white man, and then I think there might have been a third one after that. But anyways, they were local district attorneys who initially just let these men off, like they didn't see any reason to arrest them. And then Arbery's mother, kept trying to fight that. And of course, as usual, when the same group complains about something, the same people listen. So I think it was Governor Kemp that decided to revisit the case, and it was handed over to this prosecution team in Atlanta. I don't think anybody, like if you watch the first trial, I'm not talking about the federal trial, but the first trial, the state trial, nobody on that prosecution team was a real Southerner, I don't think. Maybe the black woman was, but the head of the prosecution team, that lady who headed it, clearly not a Southerner. She had a Polish last name and just very, very loud and obnoxious. And, I don't have anything against people with Polish ancestry, but she was just clearly not a native Southerner. Nothing about her was Southern. And if you compare like the whole prosecution side to the defense side, you see so many differences. The defense team was very Southern compared to the prosecution side. And the judge overseeing the case, I don't even know. I mean, he had an accent and everything, but I don't even know if he was a real Southerner because I looked at his history. He went to school somewhere up north, so I really don't know. I don't know for sure. But he was a piece of garbage. I don't know if that's been reiterated enough. The speech that he went into before the Senate thing, what a piece of garbage. I hate seeing a white man like that throwing other white men under the bus. And then another final point I want to make about that case is you notice a night and day difference between the people who were called to the stand for the defense side versus, go back to the Chauvin trial and look at how obnoxious some of the people were on the defense on the stand that were called by the prosecution in that case. They called up the sweetest Southern women from that neighborhood that the McMichaels were in. The defense called them up to the stand for this case, and they were just the sweetest, submissive women, just answering questions directly. They didn't go into rants. They just had the sweetest voices. It was like out of something from like an old movie, when you're watching a movie about a trial, like these old movies, like To Kill a Mockingbird or something, I don't know.
We're actually going to talk more about movies later this hour when Keith Alexander rejoins the show. We're talking about liberal transplants in the South and how they've changed the trajectory of... We'll continue that with Courtney next.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
That's a beautiful song. I actually, here in the studio tonight, I have a video. I guess it's the official video from Alabama. Alabama Sings the Song. That's the name of the band, Song of the South. Courtney from Alabama, our guest right now as we wrap up our Southern History Month, Confederate History Month series, where we're talking about Southern culture as well. And there are some magnificent black and white clips in this video. In fact, I'm going to post this to the website tomorrow morning for our Sunday morning music selection. We're back with Courtney from Alabama. And I'm going to take advantage of having her on, her being a female guest, and read this letter. Now, we've read this before over the years, but we'll read it again. This was a letter written by Robert Audrey of Company B, the 111th Illinois Infantry. He was in Georgia fighting our ancestors on June the 3rd, 1864, and he writes this. This is what the invader writes. Dear Father, I wanted to let you know that I am well. We are camped in Dallas, Georgia, where we found the enemy in force on the 26th. The 111th was in the front line of the breastworks, and we drew hot fire from the Reb until about 4 o'clock, when the enemy viciously charged our works. We poured hot fire into their ranks, and several times their line broke, but they rallied again and again and came on with blazing guns and flags waving. They fought like demons, and we cut them down like dogs. Many dead and dying secessionists we took prisoner. I saw 3 or 4 dead rebel women in the heap of bodies. All had been shot down in the final rebel charge upon our position. One secessionist woman charged within several rods of our works, waving the traitor flag and screaming vulgarities at us. She was shot 3 times, but still she came. She was finally killed by 2 shots fired almost simultaneously by our boys. Another she-devil shot her way to our breastworks with 2 large revolvers, dealing death to all in her path. She was shot several times with no apparent effect. When she ran out of ammunition, she pulled out the largest pig sticker I ever seen. It must have been about 18 inches in the blade. When the corporal tried to shoot her, she kicked him in the face, smashing it quite severely. Then she stabbed 3 boys and decapitated a 4th. Before a lieutenant finally killed her. Without a doubt, this gal inflicted more damage to our line than any other Reb. If Bobby Lee had fielded a brigade of these women, Union prospects would be gloomy indeed, because it would be hard to equal their veracity and pluck. Your devoted son, Robert Audrey, 111th Illinois Regimental Volunteers. No one knows her name, but her name and her bones have been lost to history, but we do have that letter, ladies and gentlemen. We do have heroes here in the South, do we not? And they are with us, And they are us, and we are them, and they still live in us, their blood and their bone. We still have it. It is still alive. They're not dead so long as one of us draws a breath. It's personal, and we dishonor them from shrinking from our duties when our enemies attack. Courtney, do you think you could have fought like that woman?
No, I'm being honest. I'm not trying to play up a stereotype. I'm being honest. I have never harmed anybody. I've never struck anybody. I don't know if I could fight somebody. It's just not in me. Heaven forbid I ever come face to face with a woman. Well, I don't want to get too mean, but a woman of a racial group who's just really, really tough, you know. I don't know if I could defend myself unless somebody was harming my children. Yes, but
the question itself was a joke. You're a delicate little thing, and but that was an incredible story. And again, folks, the names you know, the names you don't know, Lee, Forrest, and Jackson. Look, yes, our greatest heroes, but there are heroes who don't even have a name. And we honor them all this month. Well, anyway, Courtney, I know you wanted to talk this segment about being proud of being from Alabama, proud of your Southern patrimony that has been passed down to you. And I want to give you the chance to do that this segment. But first, do you want to wrap up any of the points you were making previously in the first segment with regards to liberal transplants? How not only have they altered the trajectory of Dixie, but they played an outsized role in that disgusting verdict in the Ahmaud Arbery case.
Well, I don't have much more to say on that. It's just I encourage people to go back and watch that trial and compare it to the Chauvin trial. The way the witnesses on the stand, like compare and contrast the witnesses on the stand for the defense in the McMichael trial. Compare that to the obnoxious witnesses on the stand for the prosecution up in Minneapolis for the Chauvin trial. Like that female firefighter up there, compare her to how sweet and submissive the women acted who were called to the stand from the McMichaels neighborhood who went up there for the defense. It's just very endearing to watch. But anyways, there is a lot more to go into. If I could say something quick about being from Alabama, and then if I have enough time, I might touch on the other topic I was going to go into. But you played Alabama. I love that group. In Alabama, we have so much state pride, and we're such a small-knit group down here, which I'm proud of. That, you know, it's like it's not rare for one of us to run into, you know, the leader of that band, Randy Owens. I've run into him and met him before, and we might be related. And I'm proud of it. I have roots, as I've mentioned before, I have roots that go back very deep in Alabama, back to the Confederacy, back to when Alabama was a state territory. I'm sorry that I can't talk more about the Confederate battles that my ancestors fought. And I'm not a man, so I'm not as knowledgeable about all that. But one of these days I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to ask my dad, and I'm going to just, you know, give a proper report of that. I don't know how much time I have for this other topic.
We got about 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. I'll run through this really quick. Yeah, on the topic of natural disasters, I've noticed that when white Southerners are greatly impacted by a natural disaster, it's like the news just kind of glosses over it. But if it's like black Southerners, or if it's an area with a lot of transplants, like Miami, like a hurricane hitting Miami, or if it's a natural disaster in another part of the country, like another blue part of the country somewhere else, it's like there's so much media attention. It's like, drop everything. This is the worst disaster in the world. For Hurricane Katrina, I don't know how many people realize it, but it was actually white people in Mississippi who bared the brunt of that storm. What you saw going on in New Orleans afterwards, that was an aftermath because of ridiculous city planning and flooding. But the people who bear the brunt of the actual storm where it hit, those were white Mississippians. Last year, that horrible storm that hit Louisiana last year, those were mostly white Southerners that were impacted by that. That was a terrible storm, a lot of damage. But then, you know, nothing against people in New York City. I know we have listeners up there, and I know that people up north have their own horrible storms, like snowstorms, stuff that we don't deal with down here. But I was so disgusted how that storm hit Louisiana, and then a few days later it travels across land and goes up to New York City, and then there's flooding up in New York City, and then New York City is all we hear about. You look up the name of the hurricane and it's New York City, New York City. That is not where the storm hit. Yeah, they might have had flood problems up there and other damages due to poor city planning, and I'm sure it was bad. I'm sure it was bad. But as far as talking about actual hurricane force winds and storm surge, they did not bear the brunt of that storm. And, you know, as far as where it actually hit. And I just want to close on one final note. You know, again, Hurricane Sandy was a horrible storm that hit New York City directly. And I know they had their own issues up there that we didn't worry about in the South when a hurricane hits. Like, you know, you have power outages and you have to deal with the cold. Like if you have a power outage up there, we have power outages down here, but up there it's like you have to deal with cold. And there were all sorts of dangerous issues there. It was a bad storm. I'm not taking that away. But there was a discussion online about it, and some uppity Yankee said, you know, why is it always us Northerners that have to have the worst storm and the people in the South don't deal with anything? And, you know, I went on there and a bunch of other Southerners were like, we're having a discussion about hurricanes and you have the nerve to say that we don't have storms down here.
Hold on right there, Courtney. You're right. You're right about that. Keith wants to talk to Courtney. We're going to get Keith on the phone. We're going to take a break to do that. And we'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is testifying before a Democratic-led House Appropriations DHS subcommittee on Wednesday. Tennessee Republican Congressman Chuck Fleischman asked Mayorkas about his department's preparations for the lifting of Title 42.
Would DHS have been prepared if not for the court order, sir?
Ranking Member Fleischman, thank you very much for your question. It is our responsibility to plan and prepare for eventualities that might materialize. We started to plan and prepare for the end of Title 42 commencing in September of last year, in September of 2021.
Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright's funeral service is taking place at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. today. This is USA Radio News.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Cappell here, serial entrepreneur. I started my first business in the basement of a factory over 30 years ago. We had no heat and no air conditioning. Instead of customers, our office visitors were rats, birds, flies, and snakes. Our office flooded often, and we used blankets as our office walls. We were broke and needed customers. Years later, I formed my fifth successful business, Patriot Software, which has attracted tens of thousands of customers with our easy accounting and payroll software used by accountants and non-accountants alike. Go to PatriotSoftware.com, use promo code RADIO, and get 2 months of accounting and payroll software free. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Home prices are continuing their trend upward. From the USA Radio News West Coast News Bureau, Lance Pry explains.
Home buyers in Tampa, Florida need to earn 48% more now than they did a year ago in order to afford the medium-priced home. That's according to Redfin Analysis released Wednesday morning. Other cities in the same predicament, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Orlando, Florida.
The World Bank is warning the conflict in Ukraine could cause the largest commodity shock since the 1970s. A new forecast says the conflict will contribute to massive price increases for everything from natural gas to wheat. Report co-author Peter Nagel saying households across the world will feel the impact, particularly the world's poorest. Natural gas is set to double in price in Europe, while wheat could jump more than 40% worldwide. The price increases are thanks to severely limited exports projected from Ukraine and Russia. USA Radio News.
Rolling down a backwoods Tennessee byway, one arm on the wheel, holding my lover with the other, a sweet soft southern thrill. Worked hard all week, got a little jingle on a Tennessee Saturday night. Couldn't feel better, I'm together with my Dixieland tonight. Spend my dollar, park in a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little oven, a little turning oven on a Mason-Dixon night. It's my life, oh, so right, my Dixieland delight.
A song so nice, we decided to play it twice. We played it with Sam Dixon last week, and, well, hell, it mentions Tennessee on a Saturday night, and that's where we are, and that's where we're coming to you from, and it is Saturday night, and we're wrapping up Confederate History Month, light and lively, freewheeling way with Courtney from Alabama, celebrating not just our Confederate heroes, but Southern culture in general, and that is Southern music right there. That is more contemporary Southern music, but it is distinctively Southern nonetheless, and we're going to bring Keith Alexander back into the conversation now, because we want to talk a little bit about Southern movies that people can watch and help them further immerse themselves in our ways. You know, there were John Wayne, if you go back to those movies, if it was a period piece dealing with the war between the states, John Wayne almost always played a Confederate, did he not, Keith?
Oh yeah. Hollywood was definitely pro Confederate. Confederates were the men of honor and principle. For example, another great example of that, you're talking about a pro Southern movie, is Santa Fe Trail, starring Errol Flynn as Jeb Stuart and Ronald Reagan as George Custer. And this is in the pre-Civil War period. These guys apparently all graduated. Pickett was among them and whatnot in 1854 from the U.S. Military Academy. And Jefferson Davis was the, I think, the headmaster or whatever they called him, of West Point at that time. And this is about John Brown. Raymond Massey plays John Brown, very honestly, as a wild-eyed religious maniac. Van Heflin basically starred as the solid all-American good guy in things like Shane and 3:10 to Yuma and whatnot. But in this movie, which was at the beginning of his career in 1939, he plays a bad guy. He plays Carl Rader, who's an abolitionist who gets kicked out of West Point for trying to circulate subversive materials, according to the powers that be there. What a difference a century and a half makes, right?
And then, of course, there is the movie Song of the South. I actually picked up a copy when I was in South Carolina last earlier this year. We did a show in South Carolina, maybe in February, I think, January, February, we were back. I've had a lot of fun in South Carolina over the years, but I picked that up the last time I was there, which was just a couple of months ago. That's another one. Courtney, I know you were gone with The Wind Girl, but continue on with some movies that you can think of, Courtney, that show Southerners as they truly are, rather than the caricature that the media would pretend them to be now.
Well, James, I'll be honest with you. If you want to ask me that question, I'm going to take this in an entertaining and interesting direction, but it's not really going to be the same approach. Keith knows all these wonderful movies. Do you mind if I give my approach? It's not really the same. Whatever I say, it's going to be entertaining, though. It's not.
You're the guest. You're the guest, and so okay. You take it any way you want to go.
Okay, I'll try to go through this quickly, and then I want to give it back over to y'all. But to be honest, as I mentioned earlier, here in Alabama, you know, we're like Texas. We have so much state pride. We're a small state, but we have a ton of state pride here. People haven't noticed. And when a movie takes place in Alabama, and there have been several over the past few decades, you know, when a movie takes place in Alabama, we really notice that here, and we really take note, and we go see it, and we critique it. And so when I think of movies that take place in the South, I really focus on the ones that are set in Alabama. And, you know, there have been some in recent years, Forrest Gump, Fried Green Tomatoes, Sweet Home Alabama, Cousin Vinny. And I watch those, and, you know, there's good and bad in all of those. I love it when they bring out the endearing Southern stereotypes, like the traditionalness, the state pride, the closed-mindedness. I like that, believe it or not, the closed-mindedness, the proper gender role, sweet, submissive women, you know, men who don't mind being tough, you know, stuff like that. I like those stereotypes. There's other stereotypes that are very cringy to me in each of those movies. If there's time later, I could go into those. But I do want to say something quick before I hand it back over to y'all. I do want to say something about accents and my pet peeve when they mess up an accent in a movie. They tend to, in all those movies I mentioned, like to some degree, and then in general, like it doesn't matter what region of the South a movie takes place in, they like to use that same generic old plantation Gone with the Wind accent. It's a non-rhotic accent. And if people don't know what that means, it's where you drop the R in the middle and at the end of a word, kind of like how Blanche Devereaux talked in Golden Girls. And most people in Alabama don't really talk like that. Like now, if I think of the old people, the really old people in my family back in Montgomery, a lot of them aren't even alive anymore. They do have some derivative of that accent, but it's still a rhotic accent. They pronounce their R's properly. They didn't drop them. And it's just kind of a derivative of that. And I'm about to wrap this up, but something kind of funny. I caught this guy on YouTube. He was from Alabama, and he said he worked with Hollywood. He's been working with Hollywood movies. He's not a big name or anything, probably working on the sets there. But he was doing a video teaching other aspiring actors on how to talk like somebody from Alabama. And so I would listen to him talk, and I noticed, oh yeah, that sounds like me. But then he would keep slipping into that Hollywood stereotypical old plantation accent. And I looked in the comments underneath, and I noticed I wasn't the only one from Alabama noticing that. It's like, are you really from Alabama, or did you just spend too much time in Hollywood? And on one final note, and then I'm going to hand it back over to y'all. One final note, if there's anybody up north in the audience that doesn't know what accent I'm talking about, imagine a Southern lady sitting on a front porch fanning herself, and she says, I declare, you know, kind of like, nobody in Alabama talks like that. I'm sorry. We don't talk like that.
Hey, but you did a pretty good job with it. You did a pretty good job with it right there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm handing it back to you.
Well, you took the question and you improved upon it with your answer. I do want to say this. Sam Dixon sent this in, talking about a movie. I think, Courtney, we'll skip the song for the next segment, and I want to play, as we come out of this next break, I want to play this movie clip that Sam sent in. It's called They Died With Their Boots On, and it's the military fracturing at the onset of the war. It's a pretty interesting and stirring scene. Sam Dixon just sent this to me. They Died With Their Boots On. Have you ever heard of that movie, Keith? It's a black and white. It's probably from your time.
I think that's the one with Errol Flynn and with Henry Fonda. Henry Fonda was a liberal in real life. Of course, he had the two children, Peter Fonda and Jane Fonda, to prove it. And he is in that one, if it's what I'm thinking about. Oh, or maybe it's Fort Apache that he's in. I don't know. It's one of those two. But at any rate, They Died With Their Boots On was a great movie, and it's about Custer.
It does. It does have Errol Flynn in it. Errol Flynn. I don't see the Fonda yet.
No, he's not that. We haven't converted him to a Southerner. He's not Errol Flynn yet, but...
it looks like Anthony Quinn was in it. Anthony Quinn, I'm going through the
IMDb.
Oh,
yeah, he's great. Anthony Quinn was the guy that played Zorba the Greek. And I remember a famous line from Zorba the Greek. He said, "There's only one sin for which God will not forgive you. That's when a woman invites you to your bed, to her bed, and you will not go." He said.
Heard that.
And let me see, what was the? And then, what was it? You know, my favorite movie of all time is Shane. But the only shortcoming in Shane is when the guy that plays Tori, and he was the guy that played the little hitman in Maltese Falcon, and he was also prominent in a movie with Vincent Price called House on Haunted Hill. But he was a Hollywood bit actor, and he tries to give he's supposed to be an Alabamian. He's drinks a toast to the great state of Alabama, but that phony is just jarring.
We're going to do that right
now. Back in that whole movie.
Maybe in 15 minutes when we're off the air, we'll do that. We'll raise a toast to Alabama. And Courtney from Alabama, wrapping up the Confederate History Month. We're going to play this clip from They Died With Their Boots On from Sam Dixon Sent It Over. We'll listen to it next.
American Freedom News is your daily one-stop website that will keep you fully informed. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of the big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as it provides truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first and in the historic American nation. Many Americans are finally waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America and Western civilization can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
We're about to hear an order read by a civilian member of the national government, Senator Smith. Gentlemen, because of a present crisis in the affairs of the nation, which menaces armed rebellion and destruction of the sacred union established by our fathers, it has been decreed by Congress that every officer and cadet of the Academy shall subscribe his name to the following oath. I swear to maintain and defend the sovereignty of the United States as paramount to all allegiance or fealty I may owe to any state or territory. So help me God. Any officer or cadet who finds himself unable to comply with its requirements will fall out to the right of the battalion. Gentlemen of the South, fall out! I see I was not misinformed as to the preponderance of traitors at West Point. It's high time that Congress acted to clean out this nest of secessionists.
We don't concern ourselves with the making of wars here, Senator. Only the fighting of them. The Academy leaves each man to his own sense of honor.
Gentlemen of the South, fall in!
United States Military Academy, close to the left. Gentlemen, I am sorry that our comradeship must end in these unhappy circumstances. We have lived as soldiers, and politics have had no place among us. Let us part then as we have lived, in the determination to do our duty wherever it may lie. Have we your permission to move off, sir? Move off, Captain Fitzhugh Lee. Shoulder! Arms! Bandmaster, sound Dixie.
Boy, they don't make them like that anymore, Keith. And that was basically a battalion at West Point fracturing in half, and the gentlemen of the South, as they called them, going to do their duty in Dixie.
That's great. You know, that's a it's very similar to the Santa Fe Trail. They had a similar situation. It wasn't where everybody was assembled, but it was in the barracks where Errol Flynn and Rader have a confrontation. And basically what Jeb Stuart, the character Errol Flynn played, tells Rader is that said that black people are our problem and we'll deal with it in our own way without any interference from ill-informed people like yourself.
Well, Keith, would you call, I can't believe when you said my favorite movie, of course I was waiting for Tammy and the Bachelor. That would be a Southern movie too, right?
Oh, it is so quintessentially Southern, and it's a ladies movie. It's a chick flick, okay? it was the premier chick flick of 1957, starring Debbie Reynolds as a little Southern working class girl who lives with her grandfather on a houseboat on the Mississippi River between Natchez and Vicksburg. And the whole thing is set around the Natchez pilgrimage. Leslie Nielsen, you know, the guy that played the doofus in Naked Gun and in Airport and other movies, or Airplane, I forget which one it was. He was a leading man at the time, and he plays the love interest. He's a wealthy, you know, son of somebody that has a home in the Natchez pilgrimage. And he is in an airplane crash, and she and her father, her grandfather, who's played by Walter Brennan, who, by the way, was from Massachusetts, but unlike the other people we've been talking about in this segment, Courtney, he could really give a good Southern accent, okay?
All right, well, we don't necessarily need the whole plot of the movie, but a Southern movie it is,
but,
same.
But it is, and it's set there, and it's about what a young woman ought to be looking for in a husband candidate, and what a young man ought to be looking for in a wife candidate. And it is so true. It's written by a Southerner, and it is so good and so righteous. It's probably the last righteous chick flick that has been made by Hollywood. That was 1957. That was just about the time that the censor boards, like Mr. Benford's censor board in Memphis, were going out. Benford died in 56, but he had reviewed this movie and given it his okay before it came out.
Speaking of accents, that causes me to remember that Courtney and I would dial in to the Charlottesville trial. There was a number you could call in, and you could listen to the proceedings from inside the courtroom. And that judge there sort of sounded like Fred Gwynne in My Cousin Vinny, which you just mentioned a moment ago. I mean, he seemed like one of those boss hog type judges in terms of his accent. You remember listening to that, Courtney?
Yeah. I don't even know how to, I don't even know how to start this joke, but, should I just ask him? Keith.
Yes.
Do you have cornbread and lima beans dripping from your mouth as you speak?
Although we call them butter beans rather than lima beans,
butter
right?
There's a story behind this. I'm so sorry. I got to explain. I was telling James when I was listening to that trial, I said, this judge up in Virginia, he sounds just like he has cornbread and lima bean stew falling from his mouth as he talks. And the reason I said that is because every time you go out to eat with an older Southern man or woman, it's like they always get the same food every time. It's either lima bean stew with cornbread or liver and onions and carrot salad, I've noticed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love carrot salad, and I like liver and onions, but James wouldn't touch it with a vaccinated crowbar.
You never have to worry about lima beans or butter beans or anything coming out of my mouth because it's never going to be put in there in the first place. But hey, Keith, you know, Courtney and I were laughing. You know, you and I go to Piccadilly from time to time.
Yeah,
you can see
do.
Some of that action there.
Yeah, yeah, James. It's like the forbidden fruit. He goes through the vegetable section. He'll look, but won't touch. You know.
So it's like I have a vivid imagination when I hear an older Southern man talk. It's like I imagine, you know, I don't know why. Like I just have this image of lima beans and cornbread coming out of his mouth. I don't know why, but anyways. Your guests are never going to want me back on again, I should say.
No, they're going to want you on. They're going to call for you more and more after this, I tell you.
Yeah, what's so funny is James mentioned going to his grandma to Piccadilly's, and I was like, yes, that's exactly where my great-grandmother took me, and she would always get the same food, and they always have the trays and then the Jello and the bowls, and it's like the same
lime green salad. Remember the lime green salad?
Yeah.
We got to go. Hey, Keith, we got to go back there next week before the show for our annual, or rather our weekly.
Yeah, that'd be a good change of pace. But it's I remember when those type of cafeterias came out. The first one in Memphis was called Britling. This is way before Piccadilly. And my wife's grandmother and grandfather, they thought they'd died and gone to heaven because they could actually go in there and kind of a la carte pick what they wanted for their dinner. And that was unusual. You know, it was hot luck. You'd go to a restaurant and whatever they had on the menu, you had that, and you didn't get to do a lot of substitution the way that people do now. But when that came out, I mean, particularly the older generation, they just thought they'd died and gone to heaven. That type of choice for food.
Yeah.
You had a joke for me. Let me give you a joke, a Southern joke.
Okay.
On Arkansas, okay? What do they call a 16-year-old girl in Arkansas?
Oh, gee. I don't know. A mother? Sorry,
no.
Arkansas.
No. No. Middle-aged.
Oh, God. I'm glad it's Arkansas and not Alabama.
Well, Arkansas is above the jokes, but let me tell you, Arkansas is a place near and dear to my heart because it is the most like the old South of any of the remaining Southern states. It's still a wilderness like it was in 1836, large parts of it. Neil Kumar is running for Congress up in the area that they call Ozarkia, which the Waltons in Bentonville are desperately trying to turn into the new Austin, Texas. And I hope those people hold out because that place, you know, that's the getaway place. It's, you know, it's like the old South used to be, particularly up in the Ozarks.
It is beautiful up there. We're running out of time. I want to close it with this, and I did want to end with Courtney, making it light and lively as we transition back into our standard fare. But let's reread Edward Carmack's Pledge to the South to wrap up Confederate History Month coverage. This is one of the most beautiful sentiments and one of the most beautiful things I've ever read. And he was, of course, United States Representative from the South just not long after the war. The South is a land that has known sorrows. It is a land that has broken the ashen crust and moistened it with tears, a land scarred and riven by the plowshare of war and billowed with the grave of her dead, but a land of legend, a land of song, a land of hallowed and heroic memories. To that land, every fiber of my blood, every fiber of my being, every pulsation of my heart is consecrated forever. I was born of her womb, I was nurtured at her breast, and when my last hour shall come, I pray God that I may be pillowed upon her bosom and rocked to sleep within her tender and encircling arms. So there's that one. And then from the great Confederate hero, the great General Patrick Claiborne, if this cause that is so dear to my heart is doomed to fail, I pray heaven may let me fall with it while my face is toward the enemy and my arm is battling for that which I know to be right. Folks, it's been a wonderful series again this year. We've got a lot more coming your way the rest of the year on TPC. Every week is a can't-miss show. Every week is an event here. But I've really enjoyed the last 2 months. And Courtney, I appreciate you coming on, my dear, and helping us wrap it up again. And we'll hear from you later this year as well.
Yeah, I hope I, as long as the audience will have me back after the line of
Well, what is Confederate History Month without a good lima bean joke, Keith Alexander, for our guest tonight?
Or without an appearance from Courtney of Alabama.
Oh, well, absolutely. You got to have her. And she's a mainstay. She's been with us since the very beginning. Love her. And listen, for Paul Kersey, our guest tonight, Mr. Confederate Man as well, I am James Edwards. It has really been an honor to do this again this year. We'll do it again next year, but we got a big thing coming your way in May, and we'll talk to you then. Good night, everybody.